From KCRW, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. You know, you hear Bookworm on the radio, but you also hear it as a podcast. And at KCRW, we have a number of other podcasts that are really worth listening to. Today, we're sharing an episode of the KCRW podcast that's produced in partnership with the independent publisher McSweeney's. It's called The Organist. It's an experimental arts and culture program. They like to say that they find their subjects not on the star-studded boulevards, but in the back alleys that connect them. They uncover the unexpected connections between artists and ideas. I hope KCRW listeners, and Bookworm listeners in particular, enjoy this first episode of The Organist's new season. If you like it, go ahead and subscribe and leave them a review on the Apple Podcasts app. And hey, leave Bookworm a review while you're at it. Thank you, and enjoy.
Right now, my field of vision is about the size of a toilet paper tube. And it's getting smaller, closing faster and faster, because I have a degenerative eye condition. It's got a fancy polysyllabic name, but let's just call it Deborah. And these days, Deborah is speeding up. Slow down, Deborah. It's the hurry, Deborah. So the amount of the world that I can see at any given moment is shrinking. You know that narrowing tunnel that closes around the end of every Looney Tunes cartoon? It's kind of like that, only super slowed down. A chopped and screwed Porky Pig. And once that hole closes, the TV shuts off. And the radio turns on. So going blind has gotten me thinking a lot about radio and the role of voices in my life. The thing that distinguishes radio from movies or TV or even theater is that it's nowhere. The voices are separated from the bodies that make them, and they're talking about things that you can't see. And because of this aspect of radio, it's common for producers to ask their subjects to give tours of their surroundings.
All right, so you want to describe where we're going here and what our comport looks like?
Sure.
Because when somebody gives a tour on the radio, when they describe their environment, it's like shining a flashlight around a darkened room. Ira Glass called it radio nothing. And out of that radio nothing, sudden details emerge, and we get that proverbial movie in our heads. This is why a bunch of literary magazine editors like us wanted to make this podcast, because radio and literature share this power, the ability to conjure an entire world that's filled with people and emotions and furniture and small dogs and political theory, all through the force of language. So I've been thinking about this idea of the power and the mystery of radio voices, first because I'm a podcast host, and I should add, from KCRW and McSweeney's, this is The Organist. I'm Andrew Leland. But also because I'm going blind. And once that Looney Tunes tunnel that is my visual field closes up for good, there's going to be new voices. When I'm watching TV or using my phone or computer, like in the movies, the world is going to get its own voiceover.
Welcome to VoiceOver. VoiceOver speaks descriptions of items on the screen and can be used to control the computer using only your keyboard.
And the old voices in my life, the existing voices, my family and my friends, colleagues, those voices change too. Because if you've ever spoken to a blind person, you might have experienced this, but you kind of turn into a radio announcer sometimes. It becomes your job to describe the world. People are constantly telling blind people about stairs or menu items or orange cones or high fives that they've left hanging. Any relevant information about the environment needs to get narrated. Because the world has disappeared into that radio nowhere, and the blind need people or machines to host them. To narrate the world. So for me, the question of narrative voice, of how best to tell a story or describe a room or even how to host a podcast, isn't just a creative writing exercise. It's becoming a crucial question of how I understand the world. If radio is literary in part because it reduces the world to language, then blindness is literary for the same reason. So today on The Organist, we've got three stories about the voice. The way that voices guide us, reveal the world to us, transform, and even torment us. The actor and Zen priest Peter Coyote will discuss his career performing as the voice of God, He's worked for years as a voiceover artist and has narrated most of Ken Burns' documentaries. We also asked Ellie Kemper from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and The Office to pick a sound, any sound, that was meaningful to her. And so later on in the show, she'll share that sound that's been heard everywhere from the River Jordan to the Brooklyn Bridge. But we'll start with a story from Penelope Spheeris, the director of Wayne's World, which is the greatest film of all time, according to me, when I was 12 years old. Spheeris also made the classic metal and punk documentaries The Decline of Western Civilization, Parts 1 through 3.
The Decline documents a sociological phenomenon, the most shocking American youth movement in history.
That's stupid punk rock. I just think of it as rock and roll because that's what it is.
She met her boyfriend, who she's been with for 21 years, while making the third installment of The Decline, which is about LA's gutter punks. Her boyfriend's name is Sin, which stands for Satanic Intellectual Network. And he's had a long struggle with mental health issues. So here's Penelope Spheeris to talk about her relationship with Sin and the voices that he hears.
He's Japanese and, like 6'2" or 1", whatever. And he's very, very handsome to me, you know. But you don't choose who you fall in love with, I don't think. The sound that he makes with all the instruments and everything he has in there, the sounds drown out the voices. On any given day, he can sound like the beginning of that piece of music, and everything is harmonious and pretty and melodic and nice guitar playing. All of a sudden, everything falls apart and becomes crazy and unmanageable, disconnected. And I like the piece because he at the end of it pulls it back together toward some sort of understanding and clarity, you know. Yeah, I bet you thought if you were dealing with the director of Wayne's World, you'd be having a lot happier conversation, right? I asked him the other day, since he decided finally after so many years to talk about the voices, I said, what do they say to you? And he goes, there's a bunch of assholes in the background talking all the time. I said, no, but specifically, what is it? And he said, well, it's like I'm listening in on hell. And everything that's going on in hell, and all of the people that have done all the horrible things in the world that have gone to hell are down there making noise. And sometimes they're screaming at me, and I'm on a stage, and they're screaming at me that I'm terrible and I'm a bad person. How would that be to live like that all day long? But the music drowns out those voices. I tell them sometimes, I'm like, you tell those motherfuckers come over here because I'll kick their ass, you know? I said, isn't there anything you can do to get rid of them? And he goes, nah, sometimes they go real quiet, but I can't get rid of them. It's just part of my life. The harder rock and roll got, the more I loved it, you know? So when I discovered punk rock, that was about as hard as you can get, you know? It helped me when I was growing up to get through hard times, yeah. When I met him, I said, don't you think that I'm too old for you? And he said, well, I'm 2,000 years old. How old are you? Couldn't argue with that one, man.
20 years younger.
20 years. I feel like the younger person in the relationship, by the way. He's got a good sense of style, even though, like, when I first met him, he was, like, dressed in black leathers, and they were really, really funky. But he had, like, a lot of decorations on, punk rock crap, you know. But I saw him sitting there on the sidewalk out front of Man's Chinese Theater, and I handed him some flyers, and I said, hand these to your friends and see if they want to be interviewed for The Decline 3. And he looked up at me, and I looked at him, and I went, something happened, okay? And I never believed in love at first sight or anything before that. And something happened. It was a spark. It was like, and then I caught myself and I went, wait a minute, what am I doing? Thinking there's an attraction there. What, well, gosh. And I just walked away really quick. He can just look at somebody and they will back down. He didn't have to say anything, you know? And that's the way my father was. He was the strong man on the carnival. And I lost him when I was 7 years old. And my whole life changed then. But when I'm with Sin, I feel the comfort I had when I was with my father, even though I'm older than he is, you know? And I think that's why we've been together for so long. And I can't imagine life without him. I'll always bring him back to a downer, don't you think, Jenny? But then I'll laugh about it. You said to me, do people feel sorry for you because you're with Sin?
Yeah.
The answer is, first of all, I don't care if they feel sorry for me. But I feel very fortunate that I have such a devoted person that loves me so much and protects me so much and would do anything with me. And there's nobody else that I would rather spend time with, you know? So if people feel sorry for me because I've lived with a homeless dude for 20 years, that's their problem. That's indicating how they don't understand, you know, the core of human nature. You know, it's all about compassion and love, really, you know? Is that okay?
I think that's great. Will you ask Weinberg if he has anything to add, if you don't mind?
Can you hear us, Weinberg?
Yeah. Do you think Sam would show us a studio?
I'll show you a studio.
You know, I was wondering if he'd give us
paid for it all.
Do you think he would just give us a tour and explain what he does in there for a minute?
Okay, I'll ask him.
Okay.
Do you want me to ask him to come down?
Sure.
Okay, hold on. I told him we were going to use his music, so I guess he knows about it. Hey, Sin. Sin.
So
we were going to ask you to show us or talk about what equipment you have in there.
All right. A lot of everything.
Here, let me get the towel and the socks out of the way. What do you got in here, dude?
I've got a digital audio workstation. I can record like 16 channels at a time. I've got a couple of tube amps, half stacks, a bunch of effects. The piece that Penelope showed you is just stuff I do for fun on the side. Because, you know, I started out in guitars and then got into the synths.
And so what's going through your mind when you're in this space, when you're creating?
It's real peaceful for me. I have like a lot of inner demons and it seems to calm them down.
And then do you do all the post-production work here too?
I do everything. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's, you know, it's all DIY pretty much.
He's a punk rocker.
Yeah.
After she finished the Decline films, Penelope Spheeris became a foster parent, and she's fostered 6 kids. The Decline of Western Civilization box set is available from Shout Factory. After the break, we'll hear from Peter Coyote about the problems of voice and objectivity when you're narrating films for Ken Burns. We'll be right back.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
Now here's Peter Coyote.
I don't actually believe in objectivity. Objectivity is not he said and she said. Objectivity might be 7 points of view, and I tell you what mine is. But the pretense of not having a point of view is inhuman.
Peter Coyote is a voice actor.
Hi, my name is Peter Coyote.
He's narrated the Winter Olympics, ad campaigns, and documentaries, and he won an Emmy for his work on the Roosevelts, one of many films he's narrated for the documentarian Ken Burns.
This is the story of the Roosevelts. No other American family has ever touched so many lives.
Coyote came up through the world of traditional acting, including roles in E.T. and Aaron Brockovich. He's written two memoirs about his early years, including his time with the radical Bay Area theater group The Diggers. In 2011, he was ordained as a Soto Zen priest, which taught him even more about the art of the voice.
When I was paid to perform, I did my best and I did performance. But the performance is more designed to engage you, not to manipulate you. See the world through someone else's soul. Well, see the world through someone else's soul. That's the fact, right? I can add all sorts of music and English to it, but it doesn't really change the central conceit. It just has me trying to be manipulative. See the world through someone else's soul. To me, it's cheeseball, you know? So I like Ken Burns's idea of just the facts. The first long-form documentary I ever did was a 9-hour series called The West. So we had a meeting, and he came, and he was carrying yellow pads and DVDs and pencils and yellow markers and, you know, placeholders. And I said, what is all that? He said, well, I brought the DVDs so you can watch the series and then you can hear the scripts, you know, 9 hours of just like 550 pages of scripts and you can mark down your notes in your room. And I said, oh, no, man, I never read it until I get in the studio. And he just froze and he looked at me for a minute and then he said, no, that will not work. You don't know how impeccable I am. And I must have had brat juice for breakfast because I said, oh no, man, you don't know how good I am. So there was another frozen little moment. And he said, well, all right, I'll rent a studio for a month and we'll just try it. I said, no, you don't have to do that. It's 9 hours. We'll do an hour and a half a day. We'll be done in 6 days. It's just fine. We were done in 6 days. At one point, he came up and gave me a hug, said, I'll never use anyone else again. And I've done, I think, 7 things with him. And we get along just great. He's unbelievably impeccable. He's unbelievably demanding. And he said, you know, usually when I'm working with actors, there's a point at which I've gotten everything out of them that I can get. And I know it's just like beating a dead horse. He said, I've never, ever had to settle with you. I can just keep going until I get it. And his music is quite different from mine. You know, I'm a Jew. I am Middle Eastern minor key people. So when I do a list, my tendency is to go, there's a glass and a tape recorder, headphones, an iPad, and a bouquet. He hates that because that's going up at the end of each word. And Ken likes, there's a glass, a tape recorder, headphones, an iPad, and a bouquet. That to him is just the facts, ma'am. So sometimes I'll read 3 pages and he'll say, on page 2, line 11, you went up on butt.
Peter Coyote continues to work as an actor, voiceover artist, and narrator. He lives in Northern California.
Okay, Emily Kimber. So how about Emily Kimber? I play Kimmy on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Should I say, and I've written some stuff for McSweeney's? Like, should I mention McSweeney's?
Ellie Kemper played Erin on the NBC sitcom The Office. She's also the star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. She's written a bunch of humor pieces for our sister publication, McSweeney's Internet Tendency, which is a daily humor website.
Hi, I'm Ellie Kemper. I play Kimmy Schmidt on the Netflix show Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and I've written several essays for McSweeney's.
Kemper's here because this season on The Organist, we're asking writers and artists and actors and otherwise interesting people to select a sound for us. It can be any sound, music, bird song, a scrap of language they heard on the street, as long as it's meaningful to them.
Do I tell you what the sound... Do I tell you about the sound? Oh, when I first heard it, I thought it was a man crying out. I thought it was a human voice. It's not a human voice. Should I tell you what it is? Well, it's some kind of horn, but I couldn't tell until the very end when it sort of switches into an instrument. And if we kept listening, you would have heard a man start singing.
Prepare ye the way of the Lord.
And that's also why I thought it was a man. It is the beginning of a song called Prepare Ye the Way of the Lord from the musical Godspell. And I came here to spread the good word today. No, I didn't. I am religious. I'm Catholic. And So, yeah, I am. That sounded... I was like, what of it? No. So I wanted to give you that sound because it's very meaningful to me. Whenever I hear it, it's almost like a smell in the memories that it brings back. It's just very sharp and brings back these precise feelings of what it was like to be in a musical as a freshman and with the cool upperclassmen. And it's an experience that I will always remember. I could see why Godspell suits me. I think I am pretty upbeat. I think that the whole message of that show, of Godspell, is, well, and Kimmy, I guess, but is that you need to continue to move forward and move on, especially in the face of adversity. But I think that with Godspell, which is based on the gospel, I think the message is hope, I would say. I had had surgery. My fallopian tube had twisted. It had torsion, so I had to have it removed. And so one of the worst parts about that was thinking, now I'm not going to be able to be in the musical. But I recovered from that and then was in the musical and in the performance. And I felt proud that I did that. I think I saw it as like an achievement that I was able to do that. And then I would get embarrassed towards the end of every round. Sorry, I'm so red. You can't see. I'm really embarrassed. But not that embarrassed because I did it.
All have disobeyed. Into paths of sin have strayed. And repentance have delayed. We beseech thee. Hear us come sing about love.
The first part of the final season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is streaming now. Today's episode was produced by Mike Dodge Weisskopf. Penelope Spheris and Ellie Kemper spoke to Jenny Amint. Peter Coyote spoke to Ross Simonini. It's probably journalistically ethical to say that, in the interest of full disclosure, Peter Coyote made Ross a BLT during the course of their interview, and Ross said it was excellent. Ross is still our executive producer. Our managing editor is Ben Bush. Our contributing editors are Jenny Amint, Naila Orr, David Weinberg, and the aforementioned Mike Dodge Weisskopf. Our senior editor at KCRW is Nick White. Our editorial fellow is Jonna McCone, and our intern is Laura Irving. Our technical directors are Mario Diaz and Kat Yore. Before we're done, there's one last thing. Because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm doing all this thinking and talking about blindness, and so I've been revisiting the work of Jorge Luis Borges. Borges was an Argentinian writer who went blind close to the middle of his career when he was 55 years old. Even before he lost his vision, which he called his reader's and writer's sight, Borges's fiction was conceptual. It's cerebral. He seemed to use his imagination not for conjuring images, but to build intricate structures of ideas. And there's really no better example than his 1941 short story, The Library of Babel. The story imagines the universe as an infinitely vast library. It contains every possible book, every combination of letters and symbols. Some books are just a single letter repeated over and over again. others, as Borges writes, contained
the detailed history of the future, the autobiographies of the archangels, the true story of your death, the translation of every book into every language.
Today, the internet resembles this infinite library of Babel, where the most important and beautiful ideas get crammed alongside repeating nonsense and garbage and treasure. And this is especially true for podcasts. You'd need to listen around the clock for thousands of years to hear every podcast ever recorded, and thousands are added to the library every day. So this season on The Organist, we're excited to present the iTunes Library of Babel, where we share excerpts from this infinite catalog of podcasts. Just as in Borges' story, this library we'll be dipping into goes on forever. It contains all of the existing podcasts, plus the negation of those podcasts. Some podcasts in the library are episodes of This American Life hosted by a damaged sculpture of a cat instead of by Ira Glass. Some are just 45 minutes of the sound of a sprinkler soaking a pile of Dell laptops on a hillside in Iceland in 2014. There's also one from that same hillside in 2013. And so, here are this week's extracts from the library.
Thank you for listening to This Podcast is Brought to You By. This podcast is brought to you by Sheldon Sharpeners. Are your lawnmower blades blunted by regular wear and tear, run-ins with roots and thick grasses, and the entropic forces of time itself? Sheldon Sharpeners is one of several reasonably priced options in your area. Sheldon Sharpeners, isn't it time you had the lawnmower blade sharpness you deserve?
Our first sample is called This Podcast is Brought to You By, which contains no content other than sponsors' messages.
This Podcast is Brought to You By is also brought to you by Schwarza. Be bold. Be outrageous. Stand out from the crowd. Be a rational actor. Be an irrational number. Be the picture whose eyes are always watching you. Be the person who is being watched by that picture. Be Schwarza. Be Schwarza!
This podcast is brought to you by, Owen Poindexter. You can find out more about Owen or any of our contributors at our website, kcrw.com/theorganist. Here's one more selection from the library.
You are listening to the Can You Do Something For Me podcast. I'm Phil Corbett, and today I was wondering if you could do something for me. Now, the materials you will need this week are the following. Headphones, sunglasses, even if it's nighttime, and somewhere to walk, possibly strut, preferably outside. A city street or a dirt road. I'm imagining a park. Something of that sort. Now, I will wait while you gather those supplies and get into position, so hit pause now, and when you are ready to go, hit the play button. Okay, welcome back. Assuming your headphones and sunglasses are on, even if it's nighttime, I'm going to ask you to do something for me. Can you walk slowly while this song plays?
If you have an extract from the iTunes Library of Babel, and the fact is you do, since the library contains every possible permutation of recorded sound, including the sounds you inadvertently made while you were listening to this podcast, as well as another podcast which takes those sounds and stages them into an audio drama, then send them to us, and maybe we'll share them on a future episode. You can send them to organist@mcsweeneys.net, or find us as KCRW Organist on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Okay, that's the end of the podcast now. We'll be back with a new one in 2 weeks. It's an hour-long story about poetry and mental illness and love by Bianca Gaver, which she produced with Jay Allison for Transom.org. Here's a clip.
Of all the people in my life in the past 2 years, I sometimes feel closest to Franz Wright. He doesn't know who I am, though. He died in 2015. He's a poet, a Pulitzer Prize winner, and I encountered him through 546 audio tapes he made as he was dying.
I got the headphones on and everything. I feel like a real recording artist. And I'm in the mood.
He had cancer, and because of nerve damage, he couldn't always hold a pen. So he dictated his poetry onto a little Sony digital recorder his wife bought him, burning the front of it with the tip of his cigarette.
We still have little cameras of me all the time, like a reality show for the poet, Franz Reut. It's not a tape recorder anymore, is it? There's no tape. What is it? Digital battery? This isn't on, that's good. We sound stupid.
Franz's recorder stayed on for hours. It picked up jazz music. Screaming at his cat.
Thank you, asshole!
Conversations with his wife.
Night Burial, Beth. Night Burial. There's a name for a book. He kept the most lugubrious for last. There, I got your laugh on tape.
And of course, there is always his poetry.
The only animal that cries, that takes off its clothes and reports to the mirror, the one and only animal that brushes its own teeth. Somewhere, the only animal that smokes a cigarette, that lies down and flies backward in time, that rises and walks to a book and looks up a word, heard the telephone ringing in the darkness downstairs and decided to answer no more.
Don't miss that. Subscribe to The Organist wherever you find podcasts and leave us a review in those places. And thanks again.
That was great. Yeah.
Pretty weird. Huh?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
At least it's different.
Yeah.
Here, you can go out this way.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for helping out.
Yeah, no.
Hey, give it up.
I always like The Organist piece. It's so much better than that.
Is it a popular show?
It's not popular, but it's not popular because it's weird, and, you know, yeah. I like weird stuff.
It will be.
Yeah.
Probably. Weirdness takes a while to click in.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Okay. Thank you, too, Sam. I really appreciate it.
You know your bag is open, right?
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care of
you too. Have a good one.
Bye. I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.